He had written dozens of shows and, of course, huge success. He and his brother were the toast of New York. And he was desperate to take on this project and so into it that he actually went and lived down in South Carolina so he could experience all the, you know, the actual singing that was going on and the religious worship and the actually just even the way the locals were living in the kind of unfortunate squalor that Catfish Row was. And so he really embraced this project with all his passion, and he wrote this amazing opera that happens to be well over 3 hours long. So very unusual, very different from a Broadway show. The tragedy with George Gershwin is that he died at the age of 38, and just a couple years after writing this first opera. Had he lived, I am absolutely positive that he would have been our greatest opera composer ever. Now, I always draw the analogy between George Gershwin and the Italian Giuseppe Verdi. Giuseppe Verdi, the greatest, most famous Italian opera composer, lived to be 81. The operas that he was writing when he was 30, 38, not his best. Mm-hmm. When he was about to be in his 40s and 50s, those are the really, really fabulous operas. And I think George would have grown into realizing, okay, maybe this could be a little tightened up here and this could be a little bit cut here, you know, and that sort of thing. So we have this fascinating piece that's this tapestry, this patchwork tapestry of all sorts of different musical styles. And my frustration as a conductor, as a performer back in the late 80s, early 90s, is that there was no suite that involved singers that one could do in performance, except for one by Robert Russell Bennett that turned the opera into a Broadway show. Mm-hmm. It actually reorchestrated. It was really brassy and sassy and fun. You know, it was great for pop shows. But he completely, by so doing that, eradicated the operatic aspects of the piece. And I just was so frustrated. And I was getting ready to do performances with the London Symphony of this usual Russell Bennett suite, which involved two singers. Basically the Porgy and the Bess. And I was moaning to the Porgy, Willard White, about this. And he said, well, Andrew, why don't you just write your own? And I thought, well, you know, wait a minute. That's maybe not such a silly idea. So I sat with the score and I thought, how can I make a viable suite that symphony orchestras can do with the limited budgets that symphony orchestras have? Now, when symphony orchestras do big pieces like Beethoven Ninth or Verdi's Requiem, that has four soloists plus chorus. So I thought if I could take this cast of hundreds, which Porgy and Bess is, and somehow water it down into just four principals and a big chorus part, this could be then financially viable for symphony orchestras all over the world. And then I said, well, how can I preserve the integrity of the opera? So I actually go in chronological order. But because there are only four singers, there had to be some casualties along the way. And in fact, I completely write out the bad guy in the piece, the villain, Crown, mm-hmm. who doesn't have any of the catchy tunes anyway. So, I mean, he's there. His scenes are incredibly dramatic and usually involve fights.
Yeah.
So that's not in my suite. But basically what I've done is it's a third of the opera, 66 minutes long, four soloists, big chorus part, and you get all the hit tunes.
What year did you compose this?
I think this was around 1991, 1992. So I do it and I send it to the Gershwin family, who, of course, have control over anything Gershwin. So, you know, every time you hear a United Airlines commercial, da 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 dee da dee da dum, ka-ching, money just pours into the coffers of the Gershwin family. But they said to me, well, this is all well and good and it's very nice and we'd like to make this the official suite. But you don't expect to get paid, do you? And I said, no. Just spell my name right on the cover. And so that's the story. And actually, I really just cut and pasted. I didn't write any of it myself, except for adding one G pizzicato in the double basses.
Yeah.
Because the opera works so well by itself. You don't need to do anything. It just needed to be somehow massaged into this format that is viable in a concert hall. And I think I've succeeded.
Yes, because it has definitely been receiving praise and accolades of what a job well done you've done.
Thank you.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Note. I'm Susan Gatchett-Reese. I am joined by the Colorado Symphony Orchestra's music director, a great conductor, Andrew Litton. And Andrew, I know that sometimes you conduct from the piano as well. Is it a different energy when you do that, or do you feel like the band is just as, the orchestra is just as focused on you.
Well, it's it is a very different kind of thing. The basic principle or tenet of my conducting is always to try and get players to respond to one another, to really have a jazz-like sense of ensemble, mm-hmm. where you're feeding off of each other. And of course, what we're doing is structured and written down, and you know, you're supposed to play this E flat at precisely this moment. But if you're listening to what the person does before you really carefully, you almost don't need the time beating that a conductor does on a day-to-day basis. What the conductor does, and what people don't realize, is that about 75% of our work is done before the audience walks in the hall.
Mm-hmm.
This is where, because when you're dealing with 96 people and lots of opinions, there has to be one person who does stand on the box and say, "No, ladies and gentlemen, this is how we're going to play this phrase. I need more this. I need less that. Here's the tempo. No, we weren't together. Let's fix it." And, you know, so that's basically, you're doing all of this work before, in preparation before the audience gets there. Now, when you're sitting at the piano, as I like to do, and this will be my second time this season, it throws another can of worms into the mix, because obviously there are times when my hands are busy and I can't help.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I like doing this with my orchestras because, again, it almost forces the chamber music issue, the jazz listening to each other kind of issue, on everybody. The challenge for us is Becher Concert Hall, which really has a very reverberant acoustic and makes it very difficult to hear on stage. So I didn't realize that till earlier this season, back in November, when we performed the Ravel G Major Piano Concerto, what a challenge it really is here. This has nothing to do with the skill of the orchestra, but a lot to do with the fact that they can't actually hear each other in our concert hall. So I'm looking forward with a little bit of trepidation to the Beethoven this weekend, because obviously Beethoven is fairly straightforward, mm-hmm. one tempo mostly, and but there does have to be a lot of give and take in listening. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see where it goes. But this is the Beethoven Triple Concerto. It's a piece written by Beethoven. It's one of his, it's probably one of his most cheerful pieces. You know, we
yeah,
think of
right.
Beethoven with all this drama and, you know, ba 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 ba, you know, all this minor keys. There's about two bars of minor keys in this 40 minutes of this piece.
Right.
It's just so happy and wonderful. And it's about friendship, basically.
I have a question for you regarding audience and building an audience. I know that there's been a lot of news in the papers about the symphony trying to get more of an audience. And just like in the jazz world and being a public radio station, our audience is older. And when you went to the New York Philharmonic Young People's Concert at 10 years old and heard that, and you knew then that that's what you wanted to get into, is being conducting, how do you think that we can draw more younger audiences into the fold? Is it through concerts like this, for, you know, young people's concerts? And I know there's not a cure-all. I mean, it's no. not you're not going to have the exact answer on how we can draw more audience.
Well,
but how can you draw more young people into?
Well, there's a variety of ways to do it, and I think I'm pretty excited that the Colorado Symphony seems to be addressing each and every one in its own way. The ability to go out to the schools and get kids interested in the instruments close at hand. You know, when you're sitting in a big concert hall and the violin is 100 feet away, it's very hard to go, "Wow, that's really cool." But when it's right next to you and you feel the sound waves against your body, or a brass instrument, even more telling, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So this is great. So we do go out to the schools. I think that's extremely important. We also bring students into the hall, which, you know, let's face it, I remember how excited I was when I got to leave school for the day on any sort of field trip.
Right,
it
right.
didn't matter where, you know. So there's an element of that unfortunately kind of blurs the impact, perhaps, of the actual music. But the biggest thing and the biggest difference 49 years ago when I first started going to these, 48 years ago, when I first started going to these Leonard Bernstein Young People's Concerts, is that back then there was more of an audience for classical music. Don't forget, pop music hadn't been around that much then. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this really was the viable form of entertainment in a way. And to a certain degree, classical music has been its own worst enemy by embracing lots of music that nobody really wants to hear. Dissonant music, challenging music, music you need to study to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much easier to hear a simple song once that has an impassioned lyric and you go, wow, this is great. I want to listen to this. And I've seen it with my own kids, who of course had a full exposure to classical music all the way through their upbringing, enforced piano lessons, which failed miserably. And, you know, what do they listen to? I can't tell you because I don't recognize
you
it.
You don't listen to it.
You know, I don't listen to it. But they still, you know, obviously will come to see Dad perform and come to concerts and they like it. And it's because they were exposed to it. So I think the biggest thing is exposure to the art form. And so we're trying to do our bit to do that and to make it not so onerous, but in fact, listen to how amazing this music is, and it too can make you feel really special and fulfill your soul. And so that's the mandate, and how we go about doing that changes on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, because we're always reevaluating and trying to figure out more successful ways to reach the youth of today. Now, one thing that does help is when you have a destination to go to. The Performing Arts Center is a wonderful spot to attract an audience, because you've got all these theaters, you've got a nightlife, there's a buzz, and then there's restaurants to go to before or after. And that's really important. And I saw this when I was 12 years music director in Dallas. I inherited a hall that was 3 years old where there had really been nothing before.
Mm-hmm.
An abysmal place out in Fair Park. But now there was this Meyerson Symphony Center. And the audience demographic plummeted as far as age. You know, we had so many people that were coming on dates.
Yeah.
So, you know, if somewhere down the road we could redo Betcher or whatever the situation might be to really glam it up a little bit, because right now it is the most depressing of the theaters down in the Arts Center to go to, you know, it would, I think, also help entice people to come check us out. You know, I'm seeing that now in Minnesota, where I'm artistic director of the Summer Festival. They have a brand new swanky lobby. Everybody wants to come check out the lobby of the concert hall, you know, and that gets people in, and then they suddenly go, wow, I really like that. Let's do it again.
Yeah. And also, but the symphony has brought in other artists to play with them, to perform with them, that might not be classically related, that I think has been drawing more of an audience as well.
That's extremely important. And a lot of these artists want to play with symphony orchestras. They just never get the chance.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful, because it also makes them affordable to us, because very often they're big stars and, you know, would blow our whole budget if we tried to attract them. But the fact is, they suddenly go, wow, I've heard great things about the Colorado Symphony. We want to perform with you. And that brings younger people through the door. And, you know, you stick in a little overture by somebody, you know, Rossini or somebody,
mm-hmm.
you know, they go, wow, that's in cartoons. I've heard that. You
absolutely.
Know?
Yeah.
And then suddenly the connection is made. This stuff is pretty cool too, you know.
So the renovation for Betcher Concert Hall begins, is it in next year?
I guess. Nobody really knows what's going on at the moment.
Okay.
So we're in kind of a holding pattern. It's actually that wonderful Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times, that is sort of the modus operandi right now for us.
Right.
We don't know, you know, what's going to happen with the city's plans, and we in turn don't really know what to do with our own, but all we want to do is continue to bring the greatest possible music, wide range of music, to the citizens of Denver and Colorado, and we are going to darn well make sure we can do that.